Welcome to the Power Play Podcast, where international cricketer Kyron Powell and marketing genius Jordan Shannon join forces, bringing you captivating conversations with the biggest players in cricket and business. Join us as we dive into the lives of current stars in the cricketing world, the legends before them, and those extraordinary icons whose performances changed the game in both cricket and business. Exploring journeys both on and off the pitch, the boardroom, and everything in between. Get ready for an exhilarating blend of cricket, life, and business insights with two insatiably passionate, infuriatingly no-holds-barred hosts, who, unfortunately for the rest of us, live and breathe this stuff for a living.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 21 of the Power Play Podcast. I'm Jordan Shannon, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Kyron. How are you, Guy?
I'm good. A bit of a tan, as you can see.
I know, yeah.
How are you, Jordan?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you very much, yeah. So you're back in London now?
Yep, I've been back the day after the game. Literally hopped on a flight straight after the match, got in the next morning, so yeah.
You won't be getting a suntan while you're here anyway, so don't worry about that.
The sun's out. It's just pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty mild at the minute. We're getting ready for the central heating to come off anyway soon. So, but good news, another good win against Jamaica last week.
Yep, another good win. Top of the table now. Points table hasn't been released yet to, I guess, ascertain what. Like how far in front we are, but we're definitely top of the table. And a good game as well. You know, I think that we've been playing pretty good cricket. The three matches I've played anyway, it's been three clinical matches. So
No, definitely. How did the track play?
I mean, surprisingly, the first 2 days, the ball spun quite a lot, which is what we'd probably have expected for the last 2 days of the match to happen.
Yeah.
And the last 2 days, the ball didn't do much. I think it was a pretty good trap for batting seamers on. I don't think, apart from Jeremiah Liu, I don't think there was any other seamer that sort of got anything out of it. It was pretty easy paced. Spinners did much of the damage. And as you can see, spinners opened the ball for both teams in the second innings. Obviously, as I said, thinking or with the notion that it would do even more than it did in the first innings, but that didn't necessarily happen. And I think the outfield was surprisingly fast for what I can remember Sabina Park being. Pretty good track overall. Good place. I mean, Jamaica's always a good place to play cricket. It's definitely my favorite cricketing destination in the Caribbean.
Right.
So,
okay,
100%.
Right, cool. And then you've obviously got a bit of a break now, and I don't think you play again now till the 10th of April, I don't think, or something like that, maybe second week of April.
Yep, got a 2 week break, but the days are flying past. Tomorrow's already Wednesday. So next weekend, back on a plane out to the Caribbean. I mean, it sounds good, a 2 week break, but it's definitely going to float. Yeah, it's going to float past quickly. So,
of course, and a bit of time will hopefully help with the injury recovery as well.
Yeah, what I've found is it doesn't really, I guess, make a difference, because that 2 weeks, by the time I go back to play, it just starts to re-aggravate
it,
the healing process. So I won't necessarily get a chance to, I guess, start healing fully until the season is over. I mean, which is fine. I'm still getting TLC, happy to see the lovely wife and be at home. So I think... No, I said to her this morning as well, do you realize that every time from since last season I've come back home during the middle of a break and gone back, I've made a century? She said, of course you've made a century. You're coming home to the best wife in human history. So I was like, wow.
Takes all the credit, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
No, definitely. So for this week's episode, we're going to go slightly down a different route, really, in terms of some of the players that you played against test cricket wise, and I want to sort of go into a bit more detail in terms of you pick your best 11 who you played against. I think it'll give the listeners and the people watching sort of a real insight to some of the top players you played against, but also from an insight perspective in terms of why, you know, why they feature on the list. And, you know, it was only when I was, when we mentioned obviously doing this episode tonight, when I sort of went through in a bit more detail, I sort of predicted my 11. And then obviously me and you spoke and stuff, and I went a million miles off, to be fair, but I couldn't believe some of the names, you know, that were mentioned, and some of the ones that, you know, who obviously, you know, some of the players who don't make the 11 as well. So without any further ado, we'll get stuck in. So yeah, fire away.
Yeah, well, I think before I actually name my 11 that I've played against, I think it should be noted that, for example, I haven't played against lots of teams when they would have had certain players involved. So, for example, I've played against South Africa, but I've not played against like an AB de Villiers or Zach Callis or Hashim Amla. When I've played Australia, they didn't have Pat Cummins at that point in time. These are just things that I wanted to throw out as disclaimers. Don't kill me. But without further ado, for the opening tier, I've gone with Brenda Sehwag and Alistair Cook.
Right.
I think a notable mention could be made for David Warner. I think I've gone for Alistair Cook above David Warner, just through sheer number of runs and obviously centuries, longevity in his career.
Yeah.
And I think Brenda Sehwag offers me a right-hander, right-handed version of what David Warner did with his test career. So I went for a left and a right there to give me, I guess, a bit of versatility, and see what can chip in with some off spinners for me as well, depending on conditions and if it really suits.
Well, I think definitely. Well, that opening pair as well, you've got the combination of the grit and the sort of, you know, mindset of, you know, batting the days upon days in Cook, and then you've got that aggression with Sehwag. So I can't dispute that opening partnership that you've got.
Yep. And then at number three, I've gone for Ricky Ponting. Obviously, I don't think it really needs more to be said about that. 42 test centuries. Every situation that you can think about, he can sort of handle that situation. And he's been in, I guess, every situation you can possibly think about as a number three. So
definitely,
easily slots in there at number three for me. At number four,
before you go on to four, and I'm not indicating this here with Ponting, but after 11, I want you to name your captain as well.
Okay. Number four, again, doesn't need much explanation. I've played against India when Sachin Tendulkar was around, so slots in at number four. I think he's played 200 test matches. I watched him as a kid. I played against him. I almost retired before him. So it goes without saying that he's definitely slotted in at number four. Probably the best all-round batter the game has ever seen. And his exploits have inspired generations upon generations, not only in India, but across the world to want to play cricket. So that's my number four.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's certain shoe-ins, I think, in this 11. And I think that, you know, playing against Tendulkar and him not being in the 11 would be quite a criminal. Yeah, exactly.
At number five, I've gone for Steve Smith.
Right.
I think based on, as I said, the players that I've played against, I could have had probably a Kevin Peterson, a Virat Kohli, or Kieran Williamson, maybe even a Joe Root, but I think that Steve Smith is probably the best batter of the modern generation. And again, started off as a leg spinner, so I can get a bit of filthy leg spin right now. But he astonishes me, and he's someone that every time he plays, I watch. I really love watching Steve Smith bat, and I think him having to wait for what would be a pretty amazing platform set by that top four most times, it would be a dangerous proposition having Steve Smith coming at number five. So I've gone there.
No, definitely. Then you're number six.
So this is someone that I had to have in the team, just through sheer number of runs. I think he's the second leading test run scorer, Rahul Dravid.
Yeah.
I put him at number six because even though we know that he is world-renowned at the number three position, coming in before Sachin in that great Indian team, his versatility as a batter and as a player, and he did bat at number six for a period of time for India as well. And when you think back to that amazing match in 2001, when India sort of came from behind against Australia in Calcutta, he did bat at number six with Rahul Dravid in that amazing partnership when he scored 180. So I've gone for Rahul Dravid at number six. Again, more solidarity in the batting order there.
You seem to be lacking a bit of something. I'm not sure what it is.
No, I mean, it's just thinking of him strutting at number six after those top five batters that I've mentioned is just absurd.
No, and I think that similar to Cook, he had that. Well, they all have various positives and resilience and mental resilience, but he was someone who, from my memory anyway, watching, he had that constant. Well, they called him the wall for a reason, sort of thing, and that defensive side of things where he would, you know, offer that sort of game management just to be able to sort of kill a game in the way of if they've lost quick wickets, sort of thing. So anyone who's got that sort of mindset, plus obviously the skill set beyond anyone's, a great addition.
At number seven, wicketkeeper, I've gone for MS Dhoni.
Right, okay.
I think based on, I guess, not just his ability as a batter or as a leader, but just his understanding of the game and situational awareness. Whenever he was captain, whenever he was batting, I mean, we're talking about someone that's scored a double century in a day against Australia and India.
Yeah.
Someone that has revolutionized wicketkeeping, wicketkeeper batsmen. I mean, even further to the point that Adam Gilchrist and Kumar Sangakkara had. Definitely had to slot MS Dhoni in at number seven with me.
Definitely. When I was first looking about the, when I was went through my predicted 11 as such, I didn't know whether you played against Kumar Sangakkara. So when I checked it, and I thought, oh, that's where a terrific player, and you mentioned it there, a leader as well. You know, someone from a captaincy perspective, his record is superb.
Yeah. 100%. At number eight, I've gone with Ravi Chandran Ashwin. I think this one was probably the most contentious point for me because I was looking at a Nathan Lyon, who I think is probably a better overall spinner. And you can sort of see that as well when India travels abroad from outside of India. Jadeja is the spinner that tends to be played. But Ashwin's sheer numbers, I mean, you can only pick a team based on when someone plays. You know, it's not his choice to be played overseas or not.
Yeah.
And that the fact that he scored four test centuries as well.
Well, you are lucky batting, aren't you, in that team?
Yeah, I mean, like, just in case my team out of fails, I've got someone down at number eight with four test centuries as well.
Yeah.
But no, the sheer brilliance of Ashwin, I think, sort of gave him the nod. His batting definitely pipped him for Lyon in terms of an all-time team that I've played against. But I think Lyon would probably have made the team have I not played against Ravi Chandran Ashwin.
Yeah. No, fair enough. One spinner, are we going to your quicks?
Yep, one spinner going into my quicks. So I've gone number nine, Kagiso Rabada. Again, someone that I think that hasn't played enough test cricket for whatever reason. South Africa doesn't necessarily play as much test matches as I think they should, or probably maybe even as the players would like to. But you look at Kagiso Rabada's numbers, and it's probably second to Malcolm Marshall in terms of Malcolm Marshall and Dale Steyn, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of strike rate
right,
and ability to get top players out in any situation in any country. And that's like the type of bowler that you want to have in your team. Definitely would have liked to have a Pat Cummins in there with a Rabada as well, or a Dale Steyn. Unfortunately, we haven't played against those two, but Pegisa Rabada for me ticks all the boxes as a fast bowler and what you want on your team, not what you want to be playing against.
Yeah. Well, I remember you speaking highly when we had Otis on the pod about the work that he did with him and things. So I wasn't surprised, to be fair, to see him featuring your 11.
Yep. Number 10, I've gone for raw pace, aggression, left-arm angle, Mitchell Johnson.
Yeah.
Someone with over 300 test wickets, can get the ball to move, but that's not what I have him in my team for. I don't want any of that from him. I literally want
sharp
burst of raw pace and aggression.
Right.
Rough the batters up, get them out. Mitchell Johnson, I mean, that series, that Ashes series when he sort of just demolished England and then went to South Africa shortly after.
Yeah.
I mean, lives in the minds of everyone that that witnessed those things. Piers Morgan decided that the English team was soft and batted an over from Brett Lee to show how tough he was and got three broken ribs or something in the course of trying to prove that Mitchell Johnson wasn't bowling quick. So definitely Mitchell Johnson starts into my team as a left-arm option for variety, creates a bit of foothold, rock for my off-spinners as well, going down that side of the pitch. So just thinking strategically there as well, Chanjana Ashwin would love that.
Yeah, definitely. And then to round it up,
I've gone with Jimmy Anderson, seems to be pulling a bit of a Benjamin Button on the world stage. Seems there's no end in sight. It's strange because he started back in, I think, 2003 or something. I was 13. Now I'm 34. And he's still going. I mean, you look at Ben Stokes, Mark Wood, all these guys that have injury-prone bodies, etc. And you look at Jimmy Anderson, he's so blessed as a physical specimen to be able to, as a fast bowler, running time after time, 180-odd test matches.
Yeah.
And people forget that this is someone that's played, I think, over 151 international matches as well. So it's to say his entire career has been streamlined towards test cricket, but what he's been able to do time and time again and reinvent himself as a bowler, to suit different conditions and not just be successful in England, now crossing the 700 test wicket mark. I think it's absolutely amazing that he even wants to get out of bed and play cricket, much less at such a high level and to be so consistent 21 years in.
Yeah, definitely. I think the way that you mentioned there about other players and stuff, but I think he's just lived that life for that long. You know, the level of professionalism, the way he looks after his body, I think it's a real credit to one, only like maintain that for just a sustained period, but also, like you were saying, to maintain that motivation and that sort of determination to keep going and keep going. I think that, you know, it's a massive credit to him and the way that he, you know, he keeps going about it. This was one player who I knew was going to be in year 11 because I don't want to talk about you getting dismissed, but I was watching a highlight reel of Jimmy Anderson and you featured in it twice and with two deliveries that were just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I know, and with that pink ball as well, to be fair. So it was just hooping, but honest to God, when I watched that, I was thinking, I don't even know how even if he told you what he was going to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one of those, like, as if it were yesterday, literally clipped the top of off at Lords. And I was batting so well.
Yeah, I think it was on 40-odd or something.
I was on 40-something. I got a pair of 40s in the test match. But it was that particular innings. I was batting really, really well. And I was set, seen off the new ball. I think this was his second spell.
Right.
He was coming to the end of his spell as well. So if I'd gotten through that period, like, it was smooth sailing after that. And it's just, that's when the runs were going to start to, I guess, flow a bit freer. And he produced something that wasn't even good enough to hit the stump. It literally hit the top of off. Like, it's a baller's dream.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I watched, it was like a highlight reel that TNT did for you know, for his 700 wickets, I thought, I'm sure I recognise that bloke at the other end.
Looks a bit familiar.
Yeah, just say, But no, I think, well, we'll go into your captaincy in a second, but that 11 there just goes to show, like, the quality of players that you played against, and also, like, the variation of players in terms of what they all offer. You mentioned there from your pace side of things, you've got someone who offers that raw pace. You've got Anderson and Rabad, who will consistently hit line and length and areas. And then you've got your spinner who's, you know, proven across, you know, all formats as well, really.
Yep. I mean, when you look at the team, you've got over 200 test centuries in it. and you've probably got over 2,000 test wickets in it as well. So
yeah.
I don't know what the strength is, what the captain would be looking to do. They'd be looking to battle ball first.
I know, yeah. Probably bowls who can finish the test match quicker.
Yeah, because the batters, like, everyone will be complaining, I'm batting at number 5 and I'm not getting a chance of that.
No, no. So who would your captain be?
No, I've gone for Ricky Ponting. Obviously, MS Dhoni's a tempting proposition.
Yeah.
He's won World Test Championship. He's won T20 World Cup. He's won 50 over World Cup. But you look at the teams that Ricky Ponting captained across test matches for a long time. If there was a World Test Championship back in those days, how many would they have won?
Well,
part of a three-peating 50 over World Cup winning team. They've literally dominated cricket for pretty much most of the time that Ricky Ponting was an active player in that Australian outfit. Obviously, him taking over from Steve Waugh and handing off the baton to Michael Clarke. I think if you look at his numbers, it definitely has to be him. And I'd have MS Dhoni as a very able vice captain.
Yeah, I think one thing that I would add about the Ponting aspect to it is that if anyone had the mindset and the ability to sort of manage and captain that side, it would be him. I think if someone coming through that, you know, captaining that Australia side and trying to constantly look after your players from a balance of side of things and leave, you know, yes, he had that core 11 who you know, played a majority of the test actually, but he had to leave players out as well during the squad that they had and things. So I think that he would definitely have the right way of managing and captaining that side to get that balance right as well.
100%. I mean, so would MS Dhoni, to be fair.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
You look at the dressing room that he had to deal with, and it's, you're talking about Sourav Ganguly, you're talking about Vivius Laxman, Rahul Dravid, Sachin Tendulkar, Virendra Sehwag, Gautam Gambhir himself, obviously a young Virat Kohli being introduced into that ecosystem, Yuvraj Singh. So, I mean, he's and just the pressure of being Indian captain.
Yeah. In its own right, is beyond pressure type thing, isn't it?
Exactly. So, I mean, I think both have their merits to, I guess, be able to be the one selected to be the captain, but it's just down to personal preference. And I think that Ricky Ponting would be sort of the best leader for this team.
When you were picking Steve Smith, how close were the likes of, I know you mentioned it there about Root and Williamson, would you say that they were the spots that were potentially up for grabs?
I think number 5 and number 8, so as I said, the spinning spot were the only sort of contentious areas for me. I think that Steve Smith is, by a long distance, the best batter of this generation. I think second to him is Kane Williamson, and this is just, I mean, how I rank it.
Yeah.
I think Virat Kohli's third and Joe Root's fourth. Now, this is no disrespect to any of them. They're all amazing, world-class players that have changed cricket for the better. And I love watching any and all of them, but I just think that the things that Steve Smith has been able to do for a long period of time, and I mean, obviously people may sort of have recency bias and think about what we're seeing Steve Smith do now as an opening batter. But let's not forget that this guy started test cricket as a leg spinner and made his first test century after, I think, 20 test matches.
Yeah.
And by the time he got to 100 test matches, he had 30 something. So he's literally scored 30 test centuries in 80 matches.
Yeah, it's frightening.
That's absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah. And in terms of the other, I didn't know whether you would have gone with someone like Harbajan. I thought he might have featured potentially, you know, at that point.
I did play against Harbajan, but as I said, I think Harbajan actually didn't even come into consideration because, outside of Nathan Lyon, I think the other spinner I would have possibly gone for was Ranganathera. From Sri Lanka. But obviously left arm variety, but you look at his numbers as well. I mean, this is someone that got an opportunity very late, because of Muralitharan keeping him out to the total of 800 wickets. But Ranganathan himself is able to still get 433 test wickets. So it's like, you know, lots of options. I think even maybe I would have gone for maybe even a Dan Vittori before I went for Harbajan Singh as well.
Yeah, definitely. I was looking at the scorecards, some of the stuff, and the difference in the India side from when you first played them in 2011 and then playing them in 2013, like the change in the team was quite big. But also, like, it had this, like, real, you know, the likes of Sharma and Kohli playing in the 2013. And you think at that point then, you know, them coming onto the scene at that time as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see when, I guess, teams sort of transitioned into the players that we know now.
And
just to think that I've played against some of the players I've played against as well.
It's
mind-blowing because these are guys that I've watched on TV for a large part of my childhood. And like, I can cast my mind's eye back to the first time I stepped on a field and I saw Sachin Tendulkar. I was like, oh, shit, he's real. He's actually a human. Like, and he walks. Like, he comes down, he doesn't just levitate, he actually walks on your step. And I think his bat was probably three times the size of mine.
Yeah. Really?
He didn't seem to miss much.
Just
to be in his presence. And you know, it's funny, like, when you sort of get to, I guess, meet and be up close and personal with people that you've looked on TV for a long time. It's you know, it's good knowing that, you know, you've done something to be able to be in a position to be playing against these people as well.
No, definitely, and I think that's, you know, throughout this, you know, past sort of 6 months when we've been doing this podcast, we've talked about a lot about experience. And we spoke about it prior to the 4-day championship starting, obviously the impact that you have with, you know, the Leeward Islands now and the knowledge that you can pass on. And that's down to the players that you played against, because it's not necessarily like they've all been, you know, like, you know, you're spending, you've obviously been in the environment. So it's watching them about how they go about their business, you know, their approach to the game, their mindset. It might even be something as simple as, like, you know, what they do at the day of a game and stuff. And you pick up that knowledge and you pick up that understanding, and, you know, it might not work or be relevant to yourself, but by passing and sharing that information on, it might actually help with a lot of other players as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain little things that you pick up, obviously, on your own, just seeing people do things over a period of time, but in conversation as well. I mean, these guys have all, I mean, everyone that I've mentioned in that list have all been extremely valuable in terms of offering their time. You know, they're not selfish with information. If and when you'd love to have a chat, like after a test match or whatever the case is, you know, they'd be more than happy, and they love sort of young players coming up to them and asking them questions and sharing that knowledge. And I mean, that's how I grew up. You know, like, I believe that the dressing room is a place that, obviously, it's not just where players prepare to go to battle, but it's a place where players learn the game as well. You know, after a display, sitting down and, you know, everyone discussing, oh, I got out like this today, what do you guys think I could have done differently? And, you know, like, just feeding information amongst various people, because you can't see yourself, you know, a camera or someone else has to see you and relay that information to you, and then you can sort of make adjustments and plan accordingly. Yeah. So it's important to have feedback, but when you're getting feedback from such experienced people at such a high level, then it makes it even more invaluable.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, it'd be really, I'm intrigued to see. I know that maybe next week or over the next couple of weeks, we'll definitely have a chat about, you know, your one day 11 as well. You know, there might be some names feature, in the, you know, the same list, because undoubtedly, as we've spoken many a times, whether it's white ball or red ball, a good player is a good player regardless. So I'm, you know, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about your one day 11. But you know what, I've really enjoyed listening to your talk about obviously the players you played against and going through the list. I know we're going over it again, but you probably could have named 22 that would you know, go into, you know, World 11s and, you know, mix it with the best of all time. And I think it's you know, it's been really, really insightful to get your opinions and of who you played against.
No, that's the point of the podcast. And obviously we love talking about cricket and different situations. And I've just sort of had, I guess, a revelation in my mind. Just thinking about the regional photo season now, and I guess something that could be implemented to make a change, because like I was just thinking as well, last year they had that best of the best series, where the best players sort of got together and formed two teams to play against the academy. But now that the academy is a part of the regional setup, what I'd like them to do is to still pick the best players from that tournament, best, I guess, to form two teams, including the academy and CCC, to play against whoever wins the competition. I think that would be sort of a prize for the winning teams over the years going forward. I guess sort of an additional bit of cricket for them, an extra two games, and you can name the trophy whatever you want to call it. You can still keep it the Headley Week Series, whatever they may. But I think that would be a lot more feasible as the academy is now part of the 40 season.
Yeah, that would be brilliant, because I remember when you played the best of the best last year, I thought, you know, you could tell that was a big benefit for all the sides. You know, it was a real big benefit, that. So I think that'd be a great idea, something like that. I just hope that you know, the powers that be and the board and the cricket West Indies, you know, take something like that, because I think that would be very, really beneficial.
Yeah, I think that'd be amazing. But just throwing ideas out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see if any fish bite the bait.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you very much for tonight. And like I said, either next week or the week after, whenever it works, we'll definitely get you your one day 11. And you know, let's see where it takes us.
Sounds good, Jordan. I'm going to head off and continue watching this England v Belgium match. What are your plans for tonight?
Nice. Oh yeah, I'll probably flick that on in a second. Yeah. So, looking forward to it. But thank you very much for joining us all tonight. And hope you're all enjoying the podcast.
Thank you for joining us on the Power Play podcast, hosted by Kyron Powell and Jordan Shannon. We hope you enjoyed this immersive dive into the world of cricket and business, exploring the unique experiences and perspectives of players past and present, alongside those invaluable insights into intriguing business themes that transcend beyond the boundaries of sporting heroics. Be sure to set your reminders on your Alexa or Google Home device. Or we won't tell anyone if you still use those paper calendar things from a bygone era. Join us next time for more inspiring dialogue with scintillating minds on the Power Play podcast.